Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC is 7-5 again. Oh, no.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rant of Troy Radio, episode 533, coming to you on Monday, February 12th. It is Abraham Lincoln's birthday, and we're here to celebrate, I guess. Sort of. We're going to talk about USA football and so much more. Talk about the 2024 recruiting class. Also talk about the coaching carousel, how things have gotten weird across town, and put a sum up on all of that stuff and so much more. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Rant of Troy, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Rant of Troy, email address rantoftroy@fanside.com, and our phone number 818-643-7227. Suck it, what's Bruin Show. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joining along with my co-host here in the Rant of Troy studio in Los Angeles, Lisa D'Artola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. We are back. We are back and back online, live over on the YouTubes. Big shout out to everybody in the chat who's joining us. Cam says, let's go. Rama Murdy says, woohoo, you guys are back. Yeah, we didn't have an episode last week, and this is bad news because we're not going to have an episode next week. Next week is a holiday. Next Monday. For my money, the best holiday in the American calendar, President's Day.
Is that just because it's the holiday that's around your birthday?
You know, I don't appreciate the claims of bias there.
I mean, it might be.
It's not my fault that there's a 3-day weekend, that my birthday always has a 3-day weekend. Like, I it's not my fault. Like, I'm sorry that I'm superior.
I mean, I'm just saying, like,
it's, you know, Pisces gang, stand up, you know? Anyways.
Robin Birdie in the chat is clowning us a little bit.
I know. If you're watching us on YouTube, I have a beanie on, and Ron Murdy says, is it really cold that you need a beanie? It is cold. Anything under about 69 degrees is worthy of bundling up.
My weather app currently says 62 degrees.
Yeah, that's
in our location.
Absolutely. Like, so. Yeah, realistically, and I'm putting on a hoodie if it's under 72.
And here's the thing. We overuse our air conditioning during the winter. Like, we will crank it 24/7. We're bad people.
Yeah.
But during the winter, we don't ever, like, we don't change the thermostat. We don't use mm-hmm. the heater. We don't heat the apartment.
We just support DWP, but we don't support the gas company.
We are big fans of the bundle. Just, yeah. We are big fans of the, in fact, earlier today while I was working, I was wearing this sweatshirt and my big fluffy robe over the top of that with a blanket and with, you know, I'm a big bundler.
Yeah.
Is it cold enough to justify all of those things? Maybe not for people who live in Iowa.
Sure.
Maybe not for people who live on the Eastern Seaboard.
Right.
But certainly for a California girl born and bred. Like,
hey, at least when it's cold, you don't have to worry about sweating. And hey, you don't have to worry about sweating with DraftKings either, because Trojan fans, if you join DraftKings, They have a special sign up right now where you can claim $200 after you do your $5 first bet on anything. Claim that $200. You'll also be rewarded with a separate no sweat single game parlay every single day when you opt in. The best part is you'll receive both rewards even if your first bet loses. So when you join DraftKings, make sure to sign up with our code RAINOFTROY, all one word. Using that code RAINOFTROY not only gets you these great bonuses, but helps also directly support the podcast. So if you've been considering signing up for DraftKings, make sure to use the code RAINOFTROY to maximize those first bets and parlays. This offer, of course, only available to new customers who are 21 plus and physically present in legal gambling states. Glenn in the chat says, guess Michael won't be coming out to the Midwest for away games. Sure I will, because how else will I be able to use the offer of DraftKings? Rain of Troy, all one word, over at DraftKings. So please remember to check the episode description and for all the details and gamble responsibly. Yeah. Thank you, Tim, in the chat for saying that that was a good segue.
That was a beautiful segue.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yes.
All right. Let's get to the 2024 USC recruiting class before we get to the other news, which is
what everyone's here
what
for.
What Ilium 55 wants us to talk about, which is UCLA having its Clay Helton moment, Ilium 55 says in the chat. I don't know quite if it's the Clay Helton moment, but it's an interesting thing going on across town, which we'll get to in a few minutes. But let's start with signing day. Alicia, signing day happened, I would say, last week, but we didn't have an episode almost 2 weeks ago. Signing day, of course, though, this is when we have to go on our rants that we've gone on a million times over the last couple of years. Signing day has been neutered by the NCAA. No longer what it was, which is sad and depressing, and for the nostalgia merchants like you and me, sad that it came and went with a dud. That we could go, really, with us doing a podcast 12 days later.
Yeah, yeah. It just makes me really sad. It was about halfway through Wednesday that I realized that it was like, oh, wait, yeah, today was signing day. I should go look and double check what's going on. It's just the biggest dud. Like, in our rundown, we have the February signees. There were only three of them.
Yeah.
There's only three. And you know, some big news in there, like good signees. But
make signing day great again.
But normally we'd have five times that number of things to talk about from signing day. Normally, you know, I'd have stocked up on snacks and we'd have been...
I would take signing day ready, off of
yeah,
work.
Everyone takes signing day off of work. It used to be something that we'd get up early in the morning for, to watch the LOIs come in. And it was a festive day. Everyone looked forward to it. And I know that we've sort of... The closest thing we have to that now is the December signing day. But the December signing day sucks.
It's not even remotely close.
Because the season's not even over yet. You haven't even had time to miss football yet. You're still in the middle of the, okay, I'm just going to like take a breath and maybe check out for a week or whatever. Like, it's in the middle of that week. That week of signing day is perfect. Like, okay, the regular season's over. Take a deep breath. I'm going to just sort of like let football not be on my mind 24/7 right now. And instead, it's just like, well, here's signing. It's terrible. I'm not to rant. I do this rant every year. We don't need to do this rant every time. But also, it sucks. It sucks. It sucks very much. And I wish they would change it.
Yeah. I
not just for my enjoyment either. Not just for my enjoyment, but
I
also
genuinely don't
to
think
help
it benefits
you,
anyone.
To help you segue, to contribute to a segue here. What you end up with a December signing period is kids signing in December and then their coach getting hired away in early January, which would be a totally normal time to hire a head coach. Mm-hmm. And then you've got guys who now need to get let out of their LOIs to do all this sort of stuff. It's just a whole wreck of things.
Yeah. Used to be a big hullabaloo, and now it's just a day in which USC signs Bula Balavu.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Bravo.
SC's got three signees this week or this month. Defensive lineman, four-star defensive lineman out of Carlsbad, Ratumana Bulabalavu, was a Washington signee. He got released from his LOI when the Huskies lost the national championship game and lost their head coach, and that opened up his recruitment. Got SC back in the fold, and the Trojans were able to swoop in and get the Army-Navy Academy guy out of Carlsbad, four-star defensive lineman.
Four-star defensive lineman, 6'4", 260, a frame to put on, closer to 300 pounds there. USC needs help on that defensive line. USC needs to continue to stock up defensive linemen, offensive linemen, wherever they can find them. And this is a quality one that USC is bringing in that was supposed to go to a rival and is mm-hmm. now at USC. Last time that USC pulled somebody away from Washington in similar fashion, it was Marlon Tuipulotu, and that worked out pretty well. Mm-hmm. So,
not to go on a crazy tangent, but you say rival there in Washington. Yeah, I think Washington absolutely has to be considered a rival. Not on the same level as UCLA and Notre Dame, obviously, but we've talked about before ranking USC's rivals, right? Like, it's 1 and 2 are UCLA and Notre Dame, 3 and 4 are Stanford and Cal, and then 5 and 6 are, take your pick, Oregon, Washington, Ohio State, Michigan, right? Are Oregon and Washington by default 3 and 4 now?
They have to be.
Right? Like,
because they're
like
the only
they
ones that are sticking around, yeah. They have to be, and that's it.
It's sad, but it's the way that it is.
Yes, and it makes all of these recruiting battles that much more important, because so many of these are now the local recruiting battles, all the local recruiting battles, and it does sort of just clarify for USC from a West Coast recruiting standpoint. Obviously, USC is going to have recruiting rivals on a national scale, but when it comes to maybe not the like uber elite national prospects, that it's going to be Oregon and Washington that are going to be the ones that are fighting over them. As much as Kenny mentions in the chat,
the rivalries are forever.
Stanford is still our rival. Yeah, USC and Stanford are still a rivalry, but Stanford and USC are not going to be competing for the same recruits as often as they did when they were in the Pac-12.
Well, SC has dormant rivalries like Oxy.
I mean, yeah,
Pomona,
Pomona, good old Pomona, and the local YMCA too.
Yeah,
for the record, I do want to say, as people have pointed out in the chat,
Bulabalavu?
Bulabalavu. Michael and I, this is why they're calling him. Michael and I, before we started, agreed that Bulabalavu is not a difficult name to say, but if you don't get the cadence right, it's like Stevie Tuikolovatu, where you have to learn how to say the cadence naturally. And if you second guess yourself, you're just done. You're done. So I'm sorry. We're gonna work our way
it's
through.
It's gonna be like Polamalu. Like Polamalu at the beginning, you're like, I don't know how to. What's going on here? And then you just realize it's super easy. Bulabalavu.
Yes. Yes. Bula well, I look forward to calling him Bula. apparently he's up to 285 now. So he's already put on all the weight that I mentioned. So, yeah, big dude. Big dudes with room to get bigger too.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see what he can bring the defensive line. SC also got two more guys on defense. Four-star corner Isaiah Rubin from LaSalle, and three-star linebacker Jaden Walker from Michigan. He had flipped from Michigan State.
Yeah, he didn't sign in December, and that kept the door open for USC's late pursuit of him to continue into February, and obviously that pursuit paid off, and USC just added a 6'3", 210 linebacker coming out of high school that again, these are all positions that USC needs guys. Whether or not they will be able to contribute right away mm-hmm. at a certain point is irrelevant. USC needs to keep its cupboard stocked so that it doesn't end up in the same situation that it had been, where there was just nobody around. So, all in all, Somebody in the chat said, Ilium in the chat said, you know, we actually did okay considering. And it does feel like, considering what the February signing day is now, the three additions that USC brought in are solid additions. Two of them were late flips, for lack of a better... I mean, a Washington signee who gets out of their LOI is still a flip in my mind. So mm-hmm. two of them are flips. That's good recruiting work from the defensive staff. That's very sort of new boots on the ground to get to work that quickly.
Yeah, when you put it all together, SC finishes with the 17th ranked class in the 24/7 Sports composite, down from number 8 last year, and number 17. It's not where you want SC to be recruiting wise, right? Like you want SC to have a guaranteed top 10 class every year. You want them to be top 5, and you ideally you want SC to have the top class every couple of years, right? Like I think those are normal expectations for what SC can be. They're not right there right now in terms of recruiting.
And I wonder when they will be.
I don't know. I think the rankings are fascinating because Georgia number 1 yet again, followed by Alabama, Oregon 3, Miami 4, Ohio State 5, but you look at it, Michigan one spot ahead of SC at 16, Nebraska 18. Those are two new Big Ten foes, Big Ten rivals of sorts, I guess. It's just weird because the transfer portal plays so much of a role. You can't rely on the transfer portal to be your only source of incoming talent. At the same time, you can't rely on the freshman class and the high school recruiting to be the only source of talent. It's the combination of the two. And you look at the combination of the two, and I think SC has done well when you get the transfer classes to sort of buoy the high school recruiting a little bit. But
well, what
you got to have a strong base. You got to get a little bit better recruiting wise going forward. At the same time, there's part of me, and maybe this is just apathy. And if it's apathy, tell me, and like that's fair. But there's part of me that I don't know if it's just apathy because recruiting feels like it just doesn't have the same cachet anymore because of the transfer portal, doesn't seem as final and as big and all those things. But like, I don't feel like being 17th is the death sentence that it would have been 5-10 years ago. However, it's also not exactly like the reasons to buy into USC football right now are because of the staff and because of the transfers that are coming in. Like, I don't think people are buying in for the 2024 season based on the guys that SC signed as true freshmen coming out of high school. And that's not a knock on them. It's just that it's sort of the landscape of what college football has become. And the fact that this is a class that is, you know, primarily anchored by 4-star talent. There's not a 5-star headliner. And it just sort of is what it is. If SC's going to get better, it's going to be on the coaching side of things first and foremost, I guess.
Well, but it's also a philosophy thing. This is the question. This is USC, as far as all indications that we can see, is that USC has put a greater emphasis in terms of investment, literal investment, NIL investment, on bringing in transfers and arranging NIL deals for current Trojans, and not spending the big dollars that it might take to get the 5-star elite level recruits. Mm-hmm. USC, it seems to me, has made a conscious decision to not invest that money specifically towards unproven high school recruits. I think that I personally understand that strategy. I personally get it. I don't know that I think you need to make, I think my argument for it would be that USC probably needs to pick its spots a little bit better. Yeah. I don't think I would just say I'm not going to invest in recruiting. I would say I'm only going to invest in the elite recruit that is going to be a potential program changer. that I have identified, and I've proven that I am capable of identifying those players, recruiting them, and then giving them the NIL assurances that they would need in order to come into USC. I think ignoring the recruiting landscape from an NIL perspective could end up being the wrong strategy. It could also be the right strategy in the long, like, I think everyone right now is experimenting, and USC is, to me right now, in an experimental phase.
Right.
And I wouldn't be surprised if over the next couple of years, we see USC pivot in an acknowledgement that maybe that didn't work, or in an acknowledgement that the NCAA has clarified rules, has made things a little bit more clear. We're seeing programs out there get into trouble for recruiting enticements on the NIL front that are now going into legal cases. It's all a muddle. It's all difficult to handle.
Yeah.
So I understand where USC is going. I understand it. I am not certain, like Calix Rose in the chat says, is that the best strategy? I'm not certain. I think it is a reasonable enough approach, but with the acknowledgement that it might also be the wrong approach, and USC will have to figure that out. My biggest issue right now with this recruiting class, I like the class that USC has brought in. I think it's very easy to look at the individual players, at the group of players, and say USC has done very well to evaluate, to identify needs, to bring in players that suit the needs of the program right now.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look up 24/7 Sports, California recruiting, Julian Sayin goes to Alabama, Zabian Brown goes to Alabama, Aiden Breland goes to Oregon, Vili Muasa goes to Notre Dame, Brandon Baker goes to Texas, Nate Frazier goes to Georgia, Eugene Brooks goes to Oklahoma, Jericho Johnson goes to Oregon, Dakota Fields goes to Oregon, Manasseh Itete goes to Florida State, and it takes you until number 11 to get to Xavier Jordan, the wide receiver that USC added. And then it takes you a bunch more to get to Marcellus Williams at 16 that USC added. And all along the way, you only run into a big guy from the trenches when you get to Bulabulubu, who USC lucked into in a way because of the hiring of Kalen DeBoer away from Washington to open up that opportunity. But USC has let in this class, let 4- and 5-star trench talent go to other programs, including rival programs, from programs that should be traditionally USC pipelines. I'm talking specifically about Modern Day this year.
Yeah, Xavier Brown.
But you know, Bosco and others are also having Sarah,
Dakota Fields from Sarah said that Oregon was his dream school, right?
Yeah. That is the thing that I think USC needs to change. I am sympathetic to the idea of not wanting to spend big on NIL deals, but when a 6'5", 290-pound top 50 nationally rated defensive lineman and a top 50 nationally rated offensive lineman are in your backyard at Modern Day, and you let them go to Oregon and Texas, you might not be finding the right balance between recruiting right. NIL and transfer NIL and, on roster NIL. That is the biggest issue that I think USC needs to address.
The ultimate thing here is, like, you will ultimately be judged on what happens, the result of all of this. And I think on one side, at least there is a strategy here, and it's not like SC is just going out there and aimlessly doing what they're doing. Like, it seems like they know at least there is a known strategy. They are targeting, picking their spots on transfers. Riley has talked up like the importance of wanting to be a Trojan, even though that somewhat is coach speak and whatnot. But
identifying the right mindset is important.
But
you can't use that as a crutch.
You can't use it as a crutch. But when you look at the reason that SC lost games this year was not because of the lack of talent. Yes, I think SC can absolutely get better in the trenches, player for player, and all those things, and get better in all those moments. But when you look at individual games, the individual games that they lost were still, it all points back to coaching. They lost the Utah game because of coaching. They lost the Notre Dame game because they turned the ball over. They lost the UCLA game because they just weren't ready for that game and they were out coached. They lost the, you know, insert whatever game here, because so many of them were because of coaching decisions. And that tells me that they can still win doing what they're doing now with the talent that they have. The key is going to be, can they win and then take it to the next level to where you're not only winning, but then you're capitalizing on that by getting in the playoffs and then winning inside the playoffs, right? Like,
yeah.
Washington got to the playoffs, but like they couldn't get over the hump and beat Michigan at the end, right? Like,
yeah.
I think SC can get into the position where they can pull what Washington did this past year. I think they have the talent to be able to do that in a year in which the coaching succeeds and everything comes together. But do they have enough to go the extra step? I don't think yet, but you gotta start somewhere, right? But the flip side of it is, like, is it the right strategy? Is it not? I think it's ultimately going to depend on, can you just pay it off and win games? Because mm-hmm. I think that it can be the right strategy if you get everything else right. The problem is you want it to be the easiest as possible on yourself, and it's the easiest possible when you have the best talent. These are all lottery tickets, right? Like,
yeah, and the more five-star lottery tickets you have, the more likely you are to hit on them.
They're more likely. They're still lotto tickets, but like they're heavily weighted, right? Yeah. Like, you know what it is?
And you know what the problem
is? You and I play are addicted to FIFA.
Yes.
We play FIFA. Five-star recruits are packs that are that have a heavy pack weight.
Yeah. You got a 40% chance of landing a Future Stars card. And that Future Stars card might be the crappy 86.
It might be the base level. Sure,
but it could be one of the big hitters, and that's what you're always, right. you're could always be going the icon. For. The problem right now is that it feels a little bit like USC is a no money spent team, which is not accurate because USC does spend a lot of money. USC does
RTG.
Have RTG, yeah. And Oregon, by comparison, is out there buying packs and buying Team of the Year players.
Yeah,
I'm sorry
FC.
To everyone who doesn't get, yeah, Credit Card FC. And the fact of the matter is that...
there'll be like three people who play Ultimate Team.
Who understand what
sense.
We're talking about, yeah. We're gonna get comments saying, stop talking about FIFA. The point being is that it doesn't help USC when you're being compared to Oregon, to what Oregon's doing at any given point. I use
right.
Oregon just as because it's the more West like, Coast example, but
Oregon, I think, is a prime example of, you know, I there's no reason why they're doing stuff that SC can't.
That's what I'm saying. It's like why is Oregon recruiting well enough and affording enough
right.
to bring in the recruiting class that they bring in, which was ranked fourth overall according to 24/7 Sports, while also throwing their weight around on the transfer on the transfer side of things by getting guys like Evan Stewart
mm-hmm.
from Texas A&M, Jabbar Muhammad from Washington, you know,
yeah.
Dante Moore comes and agrees to be a backup at Oregon, a backup quarterback at Oregon. Like, I think that it's hard when I think USC is doing a fine job. I'm not hitting the panic button on what USC is doing on recruiting in any of the ways, because in the end, I think that USC needs to prove they can develop before I even put too much stake yeah. behind recruiting, because I've seen top five USC recruiting classes that absolutely did nothing. So mm-hmm. The proof will be in a different sort of pudding for me, but it is concerning when Oregon is doing what they're doing on the recruiting front. And that's just one of the programs that USC has to worry about. USC also has right. to worry about Michigan throwing its weight around and Ohio State throwing its weight around. And then also think about, yeah, you can be Washington every handful of years, but what happens when you run into Georgia or Alabama? You know, these are things that USC is playing to win national titles. not just to maybe get into the playoff.
See, that's the interesting thing, because we got a super chat from Alex. So
hey,
thank you, Alex. Alex coming in the clutch here. ROI rankings: 1, coaching; 2, transfer portal; 3, high school recruiting. Is that the rankings? Yes, no, or maybe? I think that's probably right in terms of ROI. Yes. I would agree with that. I think the difference here is, and hear me out, like maybe this is a weird, you know, distinction. If you're talking about having a great football team, having a winning games and all that, like winning games, winning, you know, conference titles and getting in the playoff and all of that, I think that is the ranking: coaching, transfer portal, high school recruiting.
See, and I would,
if you were talking winning national championships on top of that, you have to have all three of those things have to be number one. Because you look at, like, I think that the blue chip ratio thing is real. Like, that is absolutely real. There's a reason why if Georgia was in the playoff, I think everyone would have had Georgia winning the playoff. And they were, what, sixth in the college football rankings at the end of the year, right? Like, because at the end of, like, the whole thing about, you know, SC during the Pete Carroll era, everybody said, well, if, you know, SC would have won the playoff every year if Pete Carroll had the playoff. I think they could have won the playoff every year that they were in it. I think realistically, if you go back and look, I don't know that they would have made the playoff every year given how the seasons went, but if they were in it, I fully believe SC would have won it, because SC dominated the blue chip ratio, right? Like, what is going to win you national championships is having all that talent and all that coaching at the same time.
That's the thing, though. That's why I think it is correct to say coaching is number one, because in the end, if you have coaches that know how to develop, that know how to game plan, that know how to call plays, that know how to adjust, all of those things, then you can overcome slip-ups in the other two categories. Yeah. Where if you don't have that, you can't overcome slip-ups in those other two categories. Mm-hmm. I would argue that a program that wants sustained success needs to aim for number one, coaching; number two, high school recruiting; and number three, transfer portal. The position that USC is currently in, it does, I think, have to prioritize transfer portal, because there have been lapses on the recruiting front. It's about filling gaps, but you need to be able to transition to a certain point into being able to identify and then also bring in the high school recruits that will be in your program and provide the foundational piece where you then fill in smaller gaps with the transfer portal. It's that analogy about the rocks of different size. The biggest rocks are the coaching, because coaching is culture, coaching is development, coaching is all of those things. So you put those in first, and then you have the smaller rocks, but the medium-sized rocks, which are your high school recruits that are sort of basic foundational kind of stuff. And then your smallest rocks are transfer portal that fill in the rest of the way. And that's how you, that's in an ideal world, that's where you want to be.
I think there's a difference between ROI and guarantees, assuredness, predictability, reliability, probably reliability as a word there. In terms of ROI, I think you're right. Ideally, in a perfect world, it's 1, coaching; 2, high school talent; 3, transfer portal. But I think that if this question from Alex is specifically about ROI, I think when we're talking about ROI specifically, the transfer portal is going to have better ROI than high school rankings. It's going to be more specifically reliable.
Depends on the position, because we've talked a lot about how I don't think there's ROI on mass offensive line.
Maybe I'm not explaining exactly what I mean.
Yeah,
I think the the transfer portal is going to be more guaranteed, more reliable.
Yes.
But in, ideally, I think you do want the ROI in general to be more about high school. Like, you want the high school recruiting to generate more revenue.
Yes.
In more XP, right?
I just don't think you want to have to rely on somebody wanting to leave another program. You want to make your program so good
But the transfer portal still is more theoretically reliable.
Well, you will hit more often on a transfer portal edition than you will on a
and they're
recruit.
Older? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So, like, I'm I think they're certainly closer together than
sure.
Maybe it's one coaching and then 2A is high school recruiting and 2B is transfer portal, and it might also change depending on the year, because this is the thing, is some teams are going to be able to be built like Michigan this past season, where you end up having a bunch of guys who could be in the NFL decide to come back, and you sort of go for broke.
You end up with like a golden generation kind of thing.
You might end up with a golden generation, and some years you're going to end up with maybe a generational quarterback that the rest of the team is maybe. From a recruiting standpoint, you're in a little bit of a lull, because realistically, everyone's always going through.
And either the most unlikely of scenarios, or the most unreliable scenario, is the sort of the LSU scenario where
you just get a Joe Burrow and
you
then
get a Joe Burrow and it makes up for having a bad head coach.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Well, you get a Joe Burrow and you get the right offensive and defensive coordinators and everything literally comes together because you just have all the right pieces.
It took literally having the greatest offense in the history of the game to get Ed Orgeron to win a national championship.
Yeah. Yeah. But the point is that Ed Orgeron
was capable
of winning a national championship because in the end, it's more about the pieces around.
In this century, there's been 3 bad head coaches to win national championships.
Orgeron, Malzahn, and...
Orgeron, Chizik.
Chizik.
Not Malzahn, Chizik.
Chizik is the one I get mixed up with.
And then Larry Coker.
That's right.
At Miami. Larry Coker, that Miami team, the greatest assemblage of talent in the history of the game.
Yes.
The LSU team, the greatest offense in the history of the game.
Yeah.
And then Cam Newton, I think you can make an argument, is the greatest one-year quarterback in the history of the game, one-year starting quarterback in the history of college football.
Yeah.
Could be Cam Newton. And like, that's what it takes to win a national championship without elite coaching.
What people don't like to hear is that winning anything also takes a healthy dose of luck.
Sure.
And the important thing that you have to do is put yourself in a position where that luck can, sometimes that luck will lift you into a conference title. You want to be in a position where if this is your lucky year, you are winning a national title as opposed to losing in the first round in the playoff, which I think is an expectation that most programs would, most programs, that is what ends up happening to them. They fall just short, but you want to be in a position where when the dice rolls your way, you're in a spot to then parlay that into a national title.
Yeah. All right. So SC's class finishes 17th in the composite ranking. A bunch of early enrollees. Almost all the class is going to be early in spring camp, which is really nice for SC. There's only 9 of the guys are going to have to be fall enrollees. That's defensive line, the lineman Carlin Jones, tight end Walter Matthews, cornerback Isaiah Rubin, defensive lineman Bulu Balavu, offensive lineman Makai Saina. Corner Braylon Conley, linebacker Jaden Walker, offensive lineman Hayden Treader, and tight ends, the Mormon missionary in Norway, Walker Lyons from the year before. Those are the only guys that are coming in the fall. Everybody else is coming in spring along with all of the transfers. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how many of these guys can gel in the spring, because SC's got a lot of positions, especially on defense, to replace, a lot of starters to replace, a lot of new blood there, not a lot of new talent, evaluators and the coaching staff. So SC's got to have very fascinating spring camp. We're going to talk about more spring camp probably in 2 weeks when we're back for our next episode. All right, let's get to the news, shall we?
Hey, Hey everyone, it's Mike Silva from Talkin' Mets. I am always about helping my listeners, and today I want to help you eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. My wife and I tried it, and we love it. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. I was tired after a long day the other night, and I was at the table eating a delicious meal just minutes after walking in the door. Are you looking for a gourmet meal? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccoli, and asparagus. You can also choose from a weekly menu of 35 options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Don't forget your add-ons. There are 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? The Mets set the playoffs as their goal this year. Get started today and fuel up your springtime goals with Factor. Head to factormeals.com/Mets50 and use code Mets50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code Mets50 at factormeals.com/Mets50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I tried Factor and loved it. Why don't you?
Alicia, you know the only good thing about football season being over?
There's literally nothing good about the football season being over. It's just an endless wait until the fall.
See, that's where you're wrong. It's tournament season. The best way to take your mind off the endless wait.
That is true. I may not want to watch the men play, but the USC women are pretty awesome.
Exactly, but it's not just SC. There's high-stake basketball moments all over the country. But you know what? They get even better with Prize Picks.
So you're saying the only thing better than watching Juju Watkins is taking the more on Juju Watkins.
Bingo. You can now turn your hoops knowledge and love of Juju Watkins into serious cash. Because you can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. Turn $10 into $1,000 with college basketball, NBA, and NHL entries. Best of all, Prize Picks lets you get on the action on more than 30 states across the country, including Texas, Georgia, and California.
That sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, download the app today and use the code RANOFTROY for a first deposit match up to $100.
That's the Prize Picks app with the code RANOFTROY for the first deposit match up to $100.
Pick more.
Pick less.
It's that easy.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, we could talk about USC basketball, which kind of sucks. So we're probably going to skip that.
That's all I have to say. USC basketball sucks. They lost to Stanford.
Men's?
USC men's basketball. Women's. There is a very good distinction. USC men's basketball sucks. Yeah. Lost to Stanford 99-68. Stanford went on a 25-0 run at one point in the first half. USC is last place in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
Everyone who listens to this podcast should know my opinion on what the result of that should be. If you are new here, if Andy Enfield is the head coach for much longer, I don't have any other things to say.
But this has got to be it, right? It's got to be it. All right. Let's talk about the other news. The news I think people want us to talk about is the coaching carousel. What's happened across town? UCLA has lost Chip Kelly. He finally left. To be the offensive coordinator at Ohio State, he flirted with some NFL jobs. I have a little bit of a rant. They're replacing him with Deshaun Foster. I got a rant to go on this. I think it is absolute horseshit that Chip Kelly left the way that he did. If I was a UCLA fan, I would be absolutely livid and irate, resentful, like... If you didn't want to be there, you should have resigned at the end of the season. It is garbage that he left in February. when the carousel was already done, and then they have to reopen the carousel, restart the search, then they're going to, like, yeah, from the SC perspective, there I can see that, you know, this absolutely is, you know, popcorn eating and all those things, but like objectively, this sucked for you. Like, what the hell? Like, dude, why? If you don't want to be there, leave, and leave on a timeline that makes it, like, it's absolute trash the way he left. Clearly, he didn't want to recruit anymore. He wanted to just go to be the offensive coordinator somewhere. Well, then resign and then take a job somewhere else. Like, I don't know what else to tell you. UCLA's coaching search ends up with Deshaun Foster, who, underwhelming, but you were always going to end up with an underwhelming hire in February. And given all the other guys that were listed, Tommy Reese, Brennan,
Barry Odom.
Yeah.
Tony White from Nebraska.
Tony White from Nebraska. Like,
who we talked a lot about for the
all
PC.
Of those names, I think, would have been underwhelming. Deshaun Foster, yeah, Ilian 55 in the chat said that he's the Clay Helton hire. I could see it. At least Deshaun Foster ended up going to the NFL at one point, and because of his coaching prowess at UCLA, and there was some sort of upward mobility there. If it's a lotto ticket for them, but like it's a little, you know, hometown knows the fight song kind of thing, and that is what it is, but like I guess they could have done worse. Either way, the whole February thing, absolutely brutal for them. And I'm very curious what Jake thinks about this at the What's Bruin show.
Yeah, we need to get Jake on to sort of to figure all of this out with UCLA. But it sucks for them, for sure. The timing sucks. The Chip Kelly thing, though, it's like a lot of people saying that, like, Clay Helton should have resigned. And it was like, well, he was never going
to
resign, guys.
He still wanted to be there, at least.
Chip definitely wanted to leave. Chip was putting himself, he was interviewing for every coaching opportunity he could.
Right.
The problem is that, like, you don't leave if leaving means you give up millions of dollars of buyout money.
I get that.
Like,
but
without a program paying it for you. I think there would be an argument for the moment he started interviewing for NFL offensive coordinator jobs, UCLA should have fired him. But again, if you're Martin Jarman, are you really going to fire him in the case that, like, you're going to pay a millions of dollar buyout because of the disrespect? Like, I think it's an impossible situation for UCLA in this.
But you're making
the
whole program a hostage. Like,
yeah, no,
like,
Chip Kelly's the villain here.
SC benefits greatly from this because they get Danton Lynn, they go out and they get, you know, the transfers that SC has taken from them, Humphrey and Ramsey, and like, yeah, that's great for SC that SC was able to do that. But like, think about this from the UCLA perspective. If he wasn't so hell-bent on his buyout, which of course you would be, like, we'd all be in that situation if there were millions of dollars on the line, I get it. But if he leaves on a normal time frame, maybe they're able to just do a normal coaching hire and they don't lose talent to SC that way. You know what I mean? Like, it totally screws them over. Obviously, SC benefits greatly here, but I don't, the whole thing just...
It sucks, but UCLA was in a position, like you said earlier, where if you are making a head coaching hire on February 12th, you're in a bad spot.
Yes.
You are picking at scraps.
Unless you have an in-house that's an obvious superstar, a la Bob Stoops stepping away for Lincoln Riley.
Yeah, and that's just most programs aren't in that position,
right?
Because
that's the rare case.
By the time that happened, that superstar probably got hired away before you got to February. So UCLA is in a bad spot. The question, I guess, is what was the best they could make of a bad situation? And I think that skepticism about whether Deshaun Foster is the best they could make of the situation is completely fair.
Yeah.
He has only been a running backs coach. He has never been an offensive coordinator, which means he's never had a staff working underneath him. He's never had to make assistant coaching hires. He's never had to do the administrative side of coaching that you'd want to have somebody sort of understand or recognize. At the same time, the bottom of the barrel options that UCLA had weren't great, because all of the good head coaches are taken by February, and anybody you would have gotten would have been supremely underwhelming. Like, they were linked to PJ Fleck, and I saw a thing where like Minnesota people were like saying, please take him. Like, that's not the coach you want when they're saying, please take him.
Right.
And we just got done talking about LSU and the idea that LSU was able to stumble into a national title despite having a very flawed head coach in Ed Orgeron. Ed Orgeron was, what he was good at was just being a figurehead, just being a rah-rah guy, just being somebody that the kids liked. And that's what DeShawn Foster, at a certain point, like, that's all UCLA needs him to be in order to be the Band-Aid that I think that they need. I think it makes a lot of sense to say, let's bring in somebody who is respected by the roster, who may be able to prevent the 30-day transfer portal window from completely picking the team clean. We're going to talk about some of the transfers that have been floated as guys who potentially could transfer away from UCLA because of the window being opened. And I think the door closes on a few of those guys because you've hired DeShawn Foster. And you're also hiring somebody that is so inexperienced. And this is some galaxy brain stuff, so go with me. Who's so inexperienced that there's no way his buyout is particularly sizable. If things go wrong for him, I feel like you've got to be able, if you're Martin Jarman and you don't have it set up this way, then you've made a mistake. If things don't go well, if things are crumbling, if the job is too big for him, you just pull the plug early and conduct a normal coaching search under more normal circumstances, as opposed to, say, you pick up PJ Fleck.
Sure.
PJ Fleck is going to want the same 5-year contract, but he's going to want way more assurances, a way bigger buyout. He's going to have more cachet on that front because he has head coaching experience, because he has all of this kind of stuff. Like, I get it. I get where they're going with this. Do I think it's going to work out? The chances of DeShawn Foster being a good head coach for UCLA are very low, and that's no shade on DeShawn Foster. It's just he's way, way, way too young. But if they had gone and gotten Danton Lynn, who at least has a year of defensive coordinator experience, but also is 10 years younger than DeShawn Foster, would it have been significantly better? I don't know. I think that
I think
Corbin in the chat said David Woods was arguing that Tony White would have been the best option for UCLA. I'm inclined to agree. So if you want to be critical, I think of UCLA might have been able to have their cake and eat it too in terms of getting a Bruin. A Bruin who would be embraced immediately because of his alumni status, while also getting somebody who at least has done something closer to the job of a head coach for almost a decade now. Like, I think that there's certainly an argument there. But also, if I was Tony White, I might talk to UCLA. I'm not 100% certain I take that
I saw a lot of tweets by people saying that Tony White really, really, really wanted the job.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
you never know when another head coaching opportunity will come.
Right.
So, I get it, but,
I see your point that DeShawn Foster could get Rick Renteria'd, and a year from now, some big name coach becomes available and you're like, oh, sorry, your buyout was $12, so you're out of here now. I get that. I just think, like, do you do that to one of your school icons? You know?
I think you do. I think it happens all the time. This is my complaint about hiring.
Like, Chelsea
legends.
Could do that with Frank Lampard the second time because he was just doing Chelsea a favor at that point. You know what I mean? But
Liverpool got rid of Kenny Dalglish. Like,
I'm just like,
it happens. You gotta pull the plug when you gotta pull the plug. And at a certain point, if UCLA had to do that, let's say it went real bad and Deshaun Foster was clearly in over his head, a la like interim Dante Williams at USC. If you pulled the plug on him after in less than a year, it would just be very obvious that you just are admitting that he wasn't there for the job. My concern, if I was Martin Jarmond, is that, like, if I have to do that, do I even get to hire the next guy? Because,
well, I think the other thing is, I think you can make a very strong argument that, like, you look at Deshaun Foster. Is he qualified to be a head coach? Probably not. No. Have there been?
Well, certainly not. I don't think there's even a probably there. He's certainly not qualified
to be a head coach. Have there been coaches who have been named head coach who have been less qualified? Yes, actually there have, right? Could they have somehow done worse? Somehow, yes. I think they could have done worse.
Yeah.
At the same point, I don't know. Like, given how poorly UCLA was coached this past season, I don't know that they're, like, at least on, I'm talking about as a team and on offense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that they are they considerably worse coming into the season? Yes, they lose the talent that they lost on defense. Surely they lost all those guys on defense. They lost Danton Lynn being the defensive coordinator, obviously. But, like, is their offense significantly worse now with a coach without Chip Kelly's resume? I don't think so. I think Chip Kelly right now is a frail, he's not what he once was, at least as a head coach. So I don't know.
I just think they have so many other questions. Like, they still need to hire, they need to backfill positions on that assistant staff. And again, it's February. I don't know where you're finding those guys.
Ilium 55 says they could have hired
Neuheisel's
Jerry
kid.
Yeah. Well, because you were talking about, like, if you had a 1 year caretaker manager.
Yeah. Honestly, if I was UCLA, I would have.
I thought Neuheisel. I didn't think about Deshaun Foster, but Deshaun Foster would have made sense for that too. Yeah.
Yeah, but Deshaun Foster had an outside job. Deshaun Foster was the Raiders running backs coach.
Right.
And he was
they
employed.
Had to bring him back. Yeah.
Yeah. Where Neuheisel could have just been as insane as it would have been.
What was your favorite moment of the Raiders Deshaun Foster era?
it was longer than the Cliff Kingsbury era at USC. So
it actually, I think it wasn't, right? It wasn't only a week.
Was it? Oh yeah, that's right. It was shorter. Yeah.
By the way, I saw a great tweet. Former USC running backs coach Deshaun Choice, recruiter of the year. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Good times. All that is to say that UCLA's loss has already been USC's gain, we hope,
with Danton Lynn. Yeah.
It could be more. There could be more. So 24/7 Sports put out an article where they floated some names. This was before the Deshaun Foster hired. I know. I'm getting mixed up. This was before the hire, so.
But by the way, you want to know a crazy thing about how awkward NCAA suspensions and stuff are for, like, improper benefits is? Deshaun Foster literally got suspended while at UCLA. While at UCLA. Did not get that 10-year ban thing that Reggie Bush got, who did not get suspended while at USC for something his parents did. And Deshaun Foster is allowed to be the head coach at UCLA, where SC could not acknowledge Reggie Bush's existence for 10 years. Like, the irony of this.
No one ever accused the NCAA of being consistent.
Nothing is ever consistent.
But okay, let's get into the players that USC could have a chance at maybe enticing. There's some familiar names in here. So quarterback Colin Schley from he was the transfer from Kent State. He decided to come to USC, I mean, he could compete with Miller Moss and Jaden Maiva. I don't necessarily see it.
Doesn't make sense for anybody.
Running backs T.J. Harden and Anthony Adkins made way more sense before Deshaun Foster came back. There is no way those guys leave, in my opinion, now. Or if they do, it's not for like a Power Five level program. Wide receiver is interesting. Logan Loya, Kyle Ford, and J. Michael Sturdivant, the former Cal transfer. Kyle Ford, obviously, former Trojan turned Bruin. Could he flip back and become a Trojan again?
Could he do the what's his face?
Pull the Brew McCoy?
The Brew McCoy.
Yeah. I certainly think it would be interesting. Would it make sense for Kyle Ford? Would Kyle Ford return to USC in a better position than he left? That I'm not certain of. But Logan Loya and Sturdivant, I think I think USC would take any of those guys, fill out that wide receiver room a little bit more, but I don't know that any of them come in as a day one starter for USC with the current group.
Mm-hmm.
Offensive lineman Garrett DiGiorgio. Oh my gosh, I can't speak.
I'm not even looking at what you're looking at, so I can't even help.
Giorgio. There's a lot of I's in this name. I'm struggling. He's an offensive lineman. USC could certainly use offensive linemen. The word on him was that he was inconsistent in 2023. So I don't know. Maybe, I suppose. Jay Toya could also do the Trojan Bruin Trojan. To do the Brew McCoy?
That would be the one to get.
I find that extremely unlikely.
Sure, but he's the one that you would absolutely.
There were allegations of some less than above board tactics to create that flip to UCLA in the first place. I don't know that. I think the blood is a little bit bad there. Like there's some bad blood here, and I just can't see it happen. Devin Kirkwood is the DB. Of all of these, that one feels like the most realistic to me in terms of go play for Danton Lynn again, go follow your fellow guys in Kamari Ramsey and who's the other UCLA DB, the corner. John Humphrey. Could be interesting. I don't know. I don't know that. I don't know that any of them like really move the needle. But I also wouldn't say no.
Yeah. I don't know. Let's get into the mailbag though, really quick.
You've got mail.
We got a voicemail, two voicemails from Tony and Denora, PA, which we're not going to play because neither of them sort of make sense at this point anymore. Because we haven't podded a while. Both of them were about Danton Lynn leaving, including for the UCLA job, and should SC fans be concerned? Danton Lynn, not even really a candidate for the job. He wasn't even one of the names that was thrown out there. Like, Tommy Reese and Tony White were the sort of the big two names. Brett Brennan, the big names all over the weekend.
That was roundly denied, though, Brett Brennan.
But like those were names that at least were going viral on Twitter. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Danton Lynn was not one of those things, which was fortunate for SC because you didn't want to have another. You didn't want to get Kingsbury again.
No.
And so SC doesn't get Kingsbury. Let's get to an email from Jimmy. Hey guys, one question I had come up from the podcast that I know you touched on a few times before. Who is your all time should have been on? It should have been or near Trojan list This doesn't necessarily need to be players that made it like Jalen Ramsey or Bryce Young. And instead could be guys like Jake Garcia, Justin Flo, Echelon. It could be guys in other sports. See Marvin Bagley committing to Duke over SC. The question is really born out of telling folks the entire year that Puka Nacua was a longtime USC commit. I'm curious, who makes your list? Fight on, Jimmy in Brooklyn. What do you got?
Puka Nacua is really a really good pull there. I think just based on some of the Washington stuff, Tuli Lotuli Gassanoa was another guy. He was, mm-hmm. if I remember correctly, part of the Moreland 2-2 trade. I think he would have been somebody who could have helped USC in a position of great need. Manti Te'o is always the one that I point to. I will mm-hmm. always tell. Speaking of signing day festivities, I will always remember watching signing day, watching live that signing day ceremony, and noting that Manti Te'o looked like he wanted to cry. You could not convince me that he actively really, really wanted to go to Notre Dame when he chose to go to Notre Dame.
The inverse, I think, was true when Juju committed.
Juju looked like he was not happy.
He looked like a sad puppy when he committed to SC.
And that turned out okay for USC. So, it does go both ways.
I mean, it turned out okay for Notre Dame that they got Te'o.
Certainly turned out okay for Notre Dame that they got Te'o. But, I mean, of that era, Te'o, Vontaze Burfict, like, there's a bunch of dudes.
I think
DeAnthony Thomas is another one Robin Murray brings up in the chat.
The hey, did you know about Puka Nacua? The moment that I think that the comparable that I think works for that in that era is Jarvis Jones.
Jarvis Jones.
Because Jarvis Jones
was a Trojan.
SEC Player of the Year. He was an All-American. He literally was a Trojan.
Yeah.
He would have been a Trojan if the doctors would have cleared him. The doctors, mm-hmm. the doctors of USC did not clear him the
Frankie
way.
Frankie Telford
that
is another one. In a different circumstances because he didn't go on to play, but
yeah.
Another guy who just could have been. Mm-hmm. What could have he been?
You can throw in Dreon Rucker in that
yes.
instance.
Yes.
Rest
sadly.
In peace. If you don't know Rucker, he was in the 2004 class,
that sounds about
three
right ish, one of those years.
He unfortunately passed away before enrolling in SC. Yeah. But he would have been a linebacker, like highly rated linebacker.
Yeah.
Ron Murdy says DeAnthony Thomas. Alien 55 says MJD and Mercedes Lewis. I think of you can mention CJ Spiller here. Other guys who SC could have gotten.
Well, I mean, Penei Sewell is one that.
Penei Sewell,
allegedly USC sort of didn't pursue, decided not to recruit for reasons that now look real dumb. Mm-hmm.
SC made the choice to prioritize Drake Jackson over Thibodeau.
Kayvon Thibodeau, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That. Like,
well, there's a whole string of quarterbacks too that USC chose to,
like they just chose the wrong guy.
USC chose to who was it that USC chose to who Darnold drove off?
Ricky Town.
Ricky Town. They chose Ricky Town over allegedly chose Ricky Town over UCLA guy.
My
Rosen? Brain's not working.
Rosen?
Yeah. Weren't they in the same year?
Rosen was 2015. Town was also 2015.
I want to say Ricky Town and Josh Rosen were in the same class, and USC decided to pursue.
Yeah, I'm
Town
trying to think of somebody
of
in another sport too.
Or prioritize, as it were.
Jock Peterson, guy who was committed to SC and then ultimately signed with the Dodgers. There's been a few guys that have had baseball commitments and gone elsewhere, but really for me, I think Jarvis Jones is sort of the one that I always remember, because there is a world in which you talk about the 2012 Trojans, and the 2012 Trojans, they went 7-5, great offense, but they just could not they just fell apart on defense. Well, that defense could have literally had senior linebackers Vontaze Burfict,
Manti Te'o,
and junior Jarvis Jones.
And that, folks, that is how is why recruiting
that recruiting could have been the trio.
Does matter.
And then you look at the 2014 class. The 2014 Trojans could have had Sua Cravens, Leonard Williams, Adoree Jackson, Jalen Ramsey.
Jalen Ramsey could have been on that team, yeah.
I mean, he would have been a true freshman 2014. But my God, like, no, he would have been a true sophomore in 2014. He was 2013 class. But so many guys, absolutely. Let's go to questions we got here on YouTube. Tim says, speaking of games we should talk about instead of FIFA, the rumor is that on the 15th, colleges are going to confirm their participation in the upcoming EA college football game. Yeah, I have been off and on following so much of the rumors of the college football game from EA, but I've been holding off because every time I watch a video, I really like Eric Rayweather on YouTube, but every college football video is just like, oh shoot, there's new stuff, and then I watch the thing and I'm like, this didn't tell me new stuff. I don't know what the new stuff is.
Rumor had it that a trailer and a release date were going to be dropped on during the national title game, and that turned out to not be true. So yeah, I too am a little gun shy about rumors about this game. But I'm very excited for it. I'm really going to be really excited when we get a release date.
Mm-hmm.
I have a little bit of anxiety about, because I hate Madden so much, that my biggest anxiety is simply, please don't let it play like Madden. Please don't let it play like Madden. But that sort of is off to the side.
Well,
should be fun.
Yeah, I am absolutely looking forward to it. I can't wait. We already have plans to have a dynasty mode online with some friends. Like, I am so pumped about it.
We should have content on here as well. I'm going to take like a week off of
work for it. Like, I'm just so, we should absolutely have content about it. We should do videos. We should become Twitch streamers.
We should become Twitch streamers.
NCAA Twitch streamer. Like, we can be the top streamers. And then we can get the LED lights behind us. What up, chat? Blah blah blah. Like, yeah, we can do the whole thing, you know.
Yeah.
I'm super pumped about the game, absolutely. Speaking of YouTube though, that I mentioned, I wanna give a shout, before I forget this, Away Days on YouTube. Ellis, over at Away Days, he's from Leeds in the UK. Away Days is a soccer channel where they go to different soccer games to see what the environment is at this game. In England, an away day is their version of a weekender, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, the country's so small that you can just go to away days. It's not an away weekend, right?
Yeah.
So his channel, Away Days, huge channel over in the UK, about going to these games, going to see what a game is like at various clubs around England, around the world. He went to a college football game. I don't know why I've put off a long time watching it. I finally watched it over the weekend. It was at the SC Washington game. And Alicia, it was crazy because I've watched his channel a million times. And to watch it, there was a comment from Zealand, who's another soccer YouTuber that I watched, that said that, like, this is like living in a house your entire life and then having a blindfolded person walk through the house and describe your house to you. Yes, it is. Go watch it. I put the link in the description here on YouTube. Go watch it after we're done with this. It is, I can't even describe it. Watching somebody who doesn't know anything about college football, who doesn't know anything about American sports, or doesn't know about the American sports culture, be in the Coliseum for a big game like that and soak it all in for what it's worth out of character is... mesmerizing isn't the word. It's like... you watch it, half of it you're watching in fear, half of it you're watching in like... I don't know. It's just go watch it. Go watch it. And then let us know your thoughts, because it's a watch.
See, I haven't watched it yet. You've told me about it. You've ranted about some moments in it, and I still haven't gone and watched it.
Some of the stuff you're just like, oh, but no, yeah. No. You want to do that to some of the...
Yeah.
To some of the comments. You want to explain away other stuff. It's great. It's go watch it. We put the link in the description. All right, we got a question from LA Fred. What is something that you still have from your childhood? I have a really terrible answer for this.
Oh, I know your answer for this, and it is horrific.
I think my answer is on my desk somewhere, which is It's
horrific. So an
it's
overstatement,
in a cup
but
somewhere. It's somewhere on yeah. my desk.
Are you going to tell the people what it is?
It's a great podcast. It's when I got braces when I was a kid, I had to get oral surgery. They gave me the teeth, and I have the teeth. It's in a little baggie.
Not like a clear baggie, if I remember correctly, from what I've seen. It's like one of those manila folders, but like miniature sized. Yeah, it's weird.
I found it recently when we moved, and then it ended up in a box, and then ended up on my desk somehow, and then I opened it and showed, and I walked up to you, and you're like, "Ah, what? The horror!"
So now that I'm looking, things that are on the table, the desk in front of us, I have this little penguin. It's a toothbrush holder.
Is that what that is?
That's what that is, and I put pens in it and stuff. It's like a little. Used it for. I've had that since I was probably 12.
Wow.
When my penguin obsession started. So that counts as childhood, maybe.
Yeah, I think so. Fred says, what is an item that you must have in your fridge or pantry?
Mayo, cheese, butter, tortillas, mac and cheese, Kraft mac and cheese.
I think Sun Vista beans. You need the staples to be able to make a box of Kraft.
I'm just literally running down my standard grocery list, my standard Costco list. Mac and cheese, butter, milk, cheese. I could subsist on, well, in college I did. I could subsist on my basic meals. If I just have cans of Sun Vista beans, boxes of Kraft Mac, butter, cheese, tortillas, and milk. That's six ingredients. I could survive for a long time if I just had a stock of that, because I'd make mac and cheese, I'd make bean burritos, I'd make quesadillas,
I think that above all else, you need to have ingredients where in a pinch you can make a quesadilla or a grilled cheese.
Yeah.
So like...
and I would just favor tortillas over bread simply because tortillas keep longer.
Sure, yeah. Tortillas and cheese, like you need to have those in some form.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Fred's last question. Favorite way to Super Bowl? Do you watch at home, go to or host a party, go out to a bar or other public viewing spots?
So, I love a watch party. I love, my family would always, my best friend growing up, his family would always host, a Super Bowl party. And then when they stopped, we would just host a Super Bowl party at our house. I love a Super Bowl party. I've gone out all out for Super Bowl parties. I've made cake pops shaped like football helmets. I've done a bajillion things. I love a Super Bowl party. My current employment situation requires me to stay at home and watched the game more or less alone. I was accompanied by you this year for
Super Bowl. I was accompanied by you. We had family friends over from out of state.
We did. They left in the second quarter, though, so they weren't there to watch the game. They happened to be there while they were waiting to catch a flight back home.
Sure.
I was working. I do. It's one of my favorite days to work because it just flies by. I love a fast-paced working day personally. That's my current Super Bowl watch. If I were to change employment or suddenly not have to work on the Super Bowl, what I would do is have a party with the family.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good idea. But I'm totally fine. First of all, the last thing I would want to do is go to a bar.
Yeah, no.
I don't. There are a few days where you could get me to never go to a bar, and that is St. Patrick's Day, Cinco de Mayo, and Super Bowl Sunday. No, thank you. New Year's Eve also. No, thank you. I will never go to a bar on those days. Not interested. Not interested in just being around a bunch of big crowds.
I love watching sports at bars, by the way. I love it. But you're right. Like on that, it's just the hassle is not. It's not it.
Yeah. It's not for me. It's not for me. A game, watching a big game, I will brave the crowds and all that stuff. Yes. But not for the Super Bowl. I guess a party, I guess. Yeah. A party or just something low key. Something where I can step away during halftime and not have to pay attention because halftime shows are usually trash. So,
Usher killed it. That was Nostalgia City, and I loved it.
They let an Usher do it, but not a ticket taker.
No, not a ticket taker. No.
That was a good joke yesterday, and you didn't even laugh. You there was a patronizing laugh here, mm-hmm. But
yeah.
Ron Murdy says, any final thoughts on this year's Super Bowl?
Going into the game, my picks were consistently the Chiefs because I just don't bet against Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, and that turned out to be correct. As I sent in one of our text chats, the Chiefs are a team that has an aura around them that seems to convince other teams,
and it's freaking annoying,
to just like shit their pants instead of just winning. Like, if they just played straightforward, they'd just win. And instead, the 49ers just collapsed. And if you give Patrick Mahomes an inch, he'll take a mile. And that's the Chiefs, and that's Andy Reid, and that's that whole team. I think when you think about the great dynasties in football, the coaches that seem to create the right kind of culture within their building that seem to be able to find that special gear with their teams and all of that. I think Andy Reid is getting up there in terms of he's just a damn good coach. And, you know, the proof of that, I think, is even more with the proof of you can have a damn good coach who doesn't necessarily have all of the pieces that perfectly fit the mm-hmm. puzzle. And that's what he was with the Eagles, but he was still wildly successful. And then you get to the Chiefs and you have the perfect quarterback for you, which I think is why I find the debate about Tom Brady and Bill Belichick tedious, because to me, so much of winning is not just about an individual, it's about the right combination of individuals and Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, and then a defense that has gotten better and better and better each year under Steve Spagnuolo. That's a damn good football team, and this might be as bad as they'll be for a little while, and they still won a Super Bowl.
That's the frustrating part. Like, this was the worst. I'm so over the Chiefs. I'm just over it. I'm over the Chiefs. I don't need to see them any again.
Like, yeah, I like the Chiefs. So.
I'm over it.
I'm cool.
Part of this is because I work with a bunch of Chiefs fans, and they're great people. But I'm just tired of them talking about the Chiefs. You know what I mean?
This is the fundamental difference between me and you, by the way. Us, we both, because we work for the same company, right? So we both are around a bunch of Chiefs fans. And you get annoyed by the Chiefs of it all, and you're just tired of it. And me, I'm just like, oh, I'm so, like, residually happy for them. That
I'm happy for them. I'm happy for them. But I've been happy for them long enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was talking to my boss, Zach, and he said the best compliment is to be annoyed with them, because that means that they've made it when they're on top this long. I'm like, that's fair enough. But the annoying part about the Chiefs is they've won 3 Super Bowls in the last few years, right?
3 and 5.
Two of those are against the Niners. They've mm-hmm. played 9 Super Bowl quarters against the Niners. The Chiefs were the better team for
2 of them.
2 quarters?
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe a quarter times. And a half? Like, and last year against the Eagles.
Well, technically it's 9. Oh, did you say 9?
I said 9 quarters. Okay, so, yeah. Oh, and they were the better team for 2 of those quarters.
Yeah.
Against the Eagles last year, they were the better team for the last quarter and a half.
And but that's why it's fourth quarter. Like, no, it matters.
I know. That's what's so frustrating
closing.
Is, like, we were this close to, like, to making Mahomes the Dan Marino who just couldn't get it done. Like we were this close, people. Follow through. Finish yes. it. Like, the Chiefs weren't even good this year. And then you let them win road games. Like, come on. Like, I just... Let Mahomes be the guy who wins a bunch in the regular season and let them be the Dodgers, please. That's all I wanted. Let Mahomes be football for Kershaw. You know what I mean?
Well, you definitely didn't get that.
That's all I wanted. I wanted.
And by the way, you are still drinking all the haterade.
Yes,
when it comes to Taylor
Guzzling
Swift.
It. Yes.
To Taylor Swift. And
I'm over it.
Meanwhile, I'm watching.
It's phony.
I'm watching her.
It's not
watching,
real.
My favorite thing about the Super Bowl, honestly, was watching her watching the game and like being that.
Who
I love
cares?
Her more now because she's so relatable. Like she was going through it the way I go through it while I'm watching sports. I loved it. And then her and Travis on
you
the field afterwards.
You do it without knowing the camera's on
They
you.
Look so happy.
Yeah, okay.
It just gives you the nice warm and fuzzies. Like it was feel good. I loved it.
Gag. Gag.
Yeah.
No. Anyways, Glenn in the chat says, excited or meh for the 2024 F1 season? I'm excited. I love Max. I love Red Bull. I'm a Red Bull Max fan. But, you know, I would like it to be more competitive on a week-to-week basis.
I think that's why I'm a little meh. Because I find it hard to believe that anyone will actually compete with Max, and it gets just a little boring when Max is just winning every week.
I also hate that this whole thing of like this is a year in which so many of the drivers have new teams next year already. Like,
oh yeah, like so. I think that makes it more interesting because like, what is it going to look like?
But it's one thing in say soccer where it's March and you. Your team has agreed to sign somebody for the fall.
Yeah.
But, like, this is literally an entire season. Lewis Hamilton is going to race an entire season for Mercedes.
The worst.
Knowing that he's a Ferrari man now.
And same with, like, Carlos Sainz is going to spend the whole season with Ferrari knowing he's not a Ferrari man now. And Checo Perez is going to be racing for most of the season in a Red Bull, wondering if he's going to be a Red Bull man next year. And it's a whole... It's a whole other thing. Like, but my worry is that I think that could create drama in the background, but in terms of the actual racing and the ability of a team to win a race or to be competitive in the race, I think it makes it that much harder for Ferrari, for Mercedes, for any of these teams that want to contend with the Red Bulls to put a good product on the course. And so I think that's why I'm very meh. But we did get a super chat from Genev Cox.
Sure.
Cheers. Pear character jumping up and down saying number one fan.
That's how I view Taylor. Yeah. There's number one fan, go team.
Go sports ball.
Oh God, sports ball. That'll really get me going.
Put the ball in the net on the other net. And we can all agree that Visa Cash App RB is the worst team name ever. Yes, which is why we're not saying that name. We're calling it VCARB and just running with it because
VCARB sounds cool.
VCARB works.
Yeah, it does sound like a health food.
The super chat was from Gary from Dana Point. Thank you. Yeah. Much
appreciated. Shout out to Gary from Dana Point. This is going to wrap up the pod. And we are going to be back in a couple weeks. I think we will, at some point in the next 2 weeks, we'll do a members-only show. So that way we can make up for some time here in February with no shows. But we'll be back 2 weeks from now on the main show. Since next week is a holiday, we'll be back on the 26th of February, as the Brits would say, to get ready for spring camp. We'll start previewing spring camp, which we're super excited about because a lot of new faces, a lot of things for SC to get ready for as they put everything together. So until next time, we will see ya. See ya.
Yeah.
See ya.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.